Hi, everyone. For this next session, please, 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 I don't think any of our, I've talked to Pam and Steve. They promised not to bite anyone or anything. Could you please come? This is going to be a more informal one. Could you please? Yes, come on. Could please come, come forward
up
a little bit?
Under
you
one of these
it.
Seats is a $100 bill.
Scary.
Just kidding. But Oprah's going to come in and give everybody a car. Sorry.
No, that's...
My performing.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
This is going to be a somewhat informal session, lots of discussion, so I think if we're kind of huddled here in the front, we'll have a little more critical mass for our conversation than we would otherwise if we're scattered about this large room. You know, one of the most...
Yes.
Does he can make it? One of the most surprising things that I've learned since coming to EDUCAUSE is that it is sometimes surprisingly difficult to get the CIO to engage around academic technology. Yet, as we know, the role of IT in academics and the teaching and learning mission of our institutions is as critical as ever. Now, at the annual meeting, the ELI has been exploring ways of expanding the dialogue with the CIO around the key issue of academic technology infrastructure and learning technology support. Yesterday, we conducted the CIO roundtable discussion that was quite well attended. And here with us this morning are the two CIOs who led the session. They will report on the discussions, but also share with us their perspectives on the role of the CIO and academic technology provisioning. So it's my pleasure to introduce Stephen DeFilippo, who is Vice President and Chief Information Officer. Is it Cecil or Cecil?
Cecil.
Cecil, I'm being UK-ish, right?
And if you're from Thank Cecil you. County, it's Cecil.
Cecil, okay. Cecil, Cecil. You say potato, I say potato. Okay, fine. And, of course, Pamela McQuesten, who is Vice President for Information Services and CIO at Southwestern University. Pam, Steve, please begin.
Thank you. Thanks for everybody moving up. I appreciate it. We do want to keep this conversational, so feel free to jump in. However, we're doing something a little different. And there are folks watching us online. So what we've done is we took the notes, as Malcolm mentioned, from yesterday's CIO and Executive IT Leader Session, and we compiled them, and between the great efforts of Julie Little from EDUCAUSE and Pam, who woke up at some ungodly hour this morning and started pulling all this together, we created a Google Doc. And for those of you who have devices that can access Google, and for those of you participating from a distance, we encourage you to log into Google, and there is a specific URL, which I will share with you in a moment, and I believe for those of you off in the cloud, it's being posted online. It is tinyurl.com/ELICIO. It's a live document. We encourage you as we go through this, because basically we're working from the notes that are in that Google Doc, and we encourage you to actually add your comments. The concept here is, as we did yesterday, and I'm very pleased to state that of about 25 or 30 people in the CIO roundtable, at least half of them were CIOs. And I think that's, if I'm correct, Malcolm can attest to this, that's kind of new for ELI to have that number of CIOs present and participating actively. We had some great conversation. There were some great, we were able to identify quite a number of good takeaways so that those of us who are teaching and learning professionals can take away and bring back to our campuses and hopefully interact a little more positively and with better outcomes with your IT leadership and vice versa, for those of us that are in the IT side of the house, to better understand the teaching and learning side of the house, faculty needs, faculty perceptions, and instructional technology folks. So with that, I think that's all of the housekeeping. We have taken the outcomes and organized them into six sort of topical sections to give it a little sort of a cohesion. So we'll go through them, and at the conclusion of each section, we will open it up for questions. So, and anyone who has questions here, we encourage you to please go to the microphones. So the first, well, the assumption that we went into this with, and if we could switch to the Google Doc, that would be awesome. Thank you. Tinyurl, tinyurl.com/ELICIO.
Are you getting it?
People are getting it? ELICIO. So somebody's got it? So we know it works. Good. Thank you. So the key assumption, clearly you can see it up there, in my language is, and I have an orientation, I think that's why Pam and I are here, we have a very strong orientation towards the mission of teaching and learning. And we believe strongly that the CIO has a strong role, and it should be a high priority in terms of budget, in terms of processes, in terms of staffing to support teaching and learning. So I think a good starting point is to ask you to raise your hand. We won't take pictures. How many of you feel you're being strongly supported by your IT leaders? About a third? Good. So the assumption is that there is a disconnect. And how do we work that disconnect? How do we navigate that disconnect? So the first section is to really look at the obstacles. Part of it is the institutional vision. And we're going to get into the notion of culture a little further down the line. But what's the vision of your president, your chancellor? What's the vision of your provost? What's the organizational structure that's going to support teaching and learning, and how IT, traditional IT, networks, systems, infrastructure, how that supports teaching and learning. So that's one of the huge disconnects, is that the organizational culture can be a significant disconnect, and you have to look at that as a starting point. So you take out your org chart, where's instructional technology report to? Who does the CIO report to? Who's your IT leadership report to? Some of my experiences with some of my colleagues in New Jersey, where I live, is that they report to the provost. The CIO reports to the provost. Others, I report to the president. So that's going to influence how teaching and learning is responded to by the IT leadership and how we bridge that gap. There are a few examples listed up here. In terms of how that org structure can undermine the cooperative efforts. Again, who does the CIO report to? Some of the comments that came out of yesterday that were sort of illuminating was the notion that the CIO reports to the provost, and that's going to create much stronger bonds with the faculty, and there's going to be a perception that the CIO has an affinity for teaching and learning, as opposed to the CIO reporting to the president or the CFO in a lot of cases. How many CIOs are in the room? Anybody report to the chief financial officer, admin services? Everybody reports to the president, chancellor? Okay. So that org structure is significant, and I think I encourage everybody to look at that as your starting point if you're struggling. So if you sit there and you sort of in retrospect say, yeah, we're having some challenges in our institution, start at the org structure and see how you navigate those waters.
So are there questions about that? Are there other obstacles that people may have identified? Yes. Yes, you're supposed to. We're online, so we would really, it would be great if he would use the mic.
Okay, you mentioned, he mentioned his structure, and it's somehow small with structure. How about, I work for the University of Minnesota, where we have the main CIO for the university. I work for the College of Liberal Arts, and I report to the CIO in the College of Liberal Arts, who reports to the CIO of the universe, who reports to the president. You know, that adds just layers and, you know, more challenging in communication and understanding of the role that academic technology plays. And added to that, to the nice budget figure or situation that we have at the moment, where academic technology directors are the first to be cut, and then we are led to report directly to the CIO without having the question of a director of academic technology.
I think that's a great point. So for the larger institutions where we're herding cats, look at that organizational structure. And if you just said that academic technology is one of the first places that get cut, that speaks to the culture of your institution. And the organizational structure feeds into that. So if there isn't a value for academic technology from a budgeting point of view,
It's worse than that, because it's not that academic technology is the first to be cut. To the contrary, they say that academic technology is the priority. But, you know, when you put academic technology under IT, you have the framework of IT kind of, and academic technology does not quite fit there.
Good point. I think it's the last bullet in this obstacle section, and we're starting, this was a good point of conversation yesterday, was that as we grow new CIOs, as new CIO leadership comes forward, that we really have to make certain, and that's part of our own efforts within the college, whether you sit on a search committee or you have some sort of a voice in the process, to make sure we're hiring CIOs who have an affinity for teaching and learning, that they have a stronger background in the academic side, not necessarily having been faculty or been in the academic side of the house, but understand, have an acknowledge the value of teaching and learning, and then can articulate that, and then turn it into a strategic vision.
And I think that speaks to one of the ways we talked about in the group, overcoming obstacles. So a key part of this, which you saw in here, what is the willingness of your leadership to look at things differently? So your leadership being everything from your board of trustees to your president to your provost to, in your case, at a large R1, what is that willingness of that CIO to look at things differently? And how might you try to facilitate, I think I dropped progress again, the conversation. For those of you who are getting this streaming, and I apologize for my voice, these AV things don't work well with dresses, so I'm doing the best I can to try to keep everything in place. I think in the other part, we heard a lot of conversation about how do you pull projects together. So how do you involve people from the tech part of your IT side with faculty, with people in academic technology, with other people around the campus on the project? Somebody mentioned in a functional way that they always made the project manager someone outside of the IT organization. So it was a way of helping everybody understand where everybody else was coming from and trying to overcome these obstacles, that it's important. I think very much what you were saying about your not trying to solve the specific issue at Minnesota, but it is a question. So how do you facilitate a conversation of people saying if academics are a priority and academic technology is a priority, how do we engage in the planning and budgeting process to overcome that? And somebody else talked about the use of business analysts. So if you're in IT on the administrative side of the house, many of you are using business analysts to help you work with functional groups. Why don't you look at your teaching and learning staff in the same way? How do you pull the instructional technologist in, if you're working on IT, to work with the faculty and work in that kind of way? And I don't think we had much of a conversation in our group about the role of libraries, so I'll bring that up as well in sort of overcoming these obstacles. What's happening in many libraries is that librarians are moving away from focusing on collections and more toward engaging students and faculty in pursuit of teaching and learning activities. So how do you overcome some of the obstacles by increasing the number of people that are involved in this activity and moving out to include them? And so I think it one of the most successful duos we had in the room from one institution made a very important point about spreading this knowledge of the importance of teaching and learning across your team, building a team of people. They went through and said, you can't be in all the meetings and all the rooms all the time. So how do you build a trust relationship with several people so you begin to share that and spread across the campus to do that? But let's turn around and move from that, unless you had questions about overcoming, to trying to get at what we're all trying to do, which is helping faculty transform teaching and learning. Stephen?
Well, good, thanks. Is anybody adding to this? I can't really tell. I'm struggling with this. I don't know if anybody's participating. So we really want people to like sort of add your comments in as we go along. This document will become a living document that we're going to include in the resources for this session. So please feel free to add your voice. Even, you know, I think we have like about 8 or 10 people joining right now, so that's great. We discovered that we know people want to be invited to join the conversation across your campus. How do you do that? So there's a number of different strategies and tactics that we are fairly common with. So one of them, somebody actually said, I love the phrase that they do speed dating. I forget who it was, but they go, when they first got on campus, they're fairly new to their CIO role, and they just went around and met with as many people as they could as fast as they could. So I thought that was an interesting concept to bring speed dating to the table. Kind of going back to the organizational piece, your provost is huge. Provost, as we know, can influence the direction that your academic efforts take. So the question to ask, is your provost a champion for technology? Do they use technology? Do they encourage faculty and their staff to use technology? So when you go to them, do you have a champion and a supporter and a friend, or are you sort of swimming upstream? So you have to work the politics, if you will, of the system. Who has lunch with the provost? How do you befriend them so you can get to the provost? So you really need to focus on how that provost and the interaction with your provost is going to benefit the CIO. I have the opportunity to sit across the table from our vice president for academic programs, which is essentially our provost. They are huge champions of technology to the extent that we've actually built our LMS into our business continuity plan. So I think we kind of take it to an extreme. So all of our faculty are sort of required to have a presence in Blackboard or LMS, even if they don't teach an online course. So that helps with our business continuity. So it's an interesting notion. So how do you encourage, how do you leverage your institution's strategic plan? How do you work cooperatively with your provost? Take them out to lunch. Have a cup of coffee. I've lost my notes. Apologize. So even beyond that, so, you know, how do you find the entry points of conversation with your provost? So whether it's through influencers, key influencers in the provost's office, making sure that the provost staff has donuts and coffee and good stuff, right? So it's all part of the politic. But then how do you influence faculty? So you do it a little more organically. So when you're working at the provost level, you're working from the top of the organization down. How do you influence faculty? How do you start to work with faculty? Find your early adopters. And in my case, I just pour whatever they want at them. So my sort of strategy is, from a CIO role, because I have the discretionary budget, is to create a smorgasbord of tools, resources, and services, and just put them out there for the faculty. And then see who comes to the table first, and then we grab them and start working with them diligently. So our instructional technology staff, our IT help desk staff, who is actually an extension of our instructional technology group, works closely with those early adopters, those early influencers. We work closely with faculty. And a lot of these, what I'm saying, I'm talking about some of the ideas that came out of yesterday's session, get involved in going to faculty senate meetings, faculty committee meetings. What Pam does, I think, is awesome. Pam's office is in the faculty building. Now, how many CIOs want their office so far away from faculty? Immerse yourself in with the faculty. So I think there's a lot of strategies around how to engage the faculty to build the bridge so that there's a trusting relationship you start to build and a certain sort of respect that starts to develop. What am I missing here? We did speed dating. Oh, one size does not fit all. So part of the challenge for CIOs is that we always want to do things big, do them all at once, and capture as many people into the corral as we can. But some of the ideas that came out of yesterday was not one size just doesn't fit all. You can't please everybody all the time. So you should tailor your strategies to understand that you can't be all-inclusive, and you have to find your moments of win, your teachable moments with faculty and staff, and try and drive to those and bridge those relationships. Faculty, interestingly enough, some of the comments was the faculty want to know what's in it for them. So from the CIO role, faculty are going to say, okay, how's it going to make my life easier? Is it going to make my day faster, expedite the process? Am I going to make more money from it? So faculty have a number of different motivational points. So how do we leverage those faculty and instructional technology, their motivational points, so that we can then better build those bridges? And then finally, and this is my favorite one, is that if you were at last EDUCAUSE national meeting, Clay Shirky, who was the keynote speaker, used the phrase, he said, proceed until apprehended. So I encourage everybody to do that. So a couple ideas that came out of the session was that there's an individual who, because the cost of technology is coming down, and because of so much of what we touch as a consumer-driven product, whether it's an iPad, smartphone, tiny little projectors, all kinds of goodies. We use Siftio cubes that you can buy at Toys R Us for our faculty to work with math students. They're very inexpensive, so you don't have to get CIO approval. You know, if you have some budget money, you can go off and do whatever you think is best for your faculty, for your instructional technology folks, without necessarily getting all the approvals and authority that you normally might need. So that's the proceed until apprehended approach. Any questions around that whole notion of engaging faculty? And yes.
Microphone, please.
Come on up.
I understand the idea of engaging early adopters. Do you just ignore late adopters, or do you have some strategy for late adopters?
I love to talk about this. I was put in the embarrassing position once of having my IT staff walk into a room wearing identical T-shirts that said, progress one death at a time. But I think when you do look at, if you look at an adoption curve, so if you're really looking at that diffusion of innovations curve, there are percentages in there. So you turn around and think about, this is where the strategic part comes in. I mean, it's very easy for us to move. The ones that are before the early adopters are the innovators, the real out there folks. So you've got that much. You've got an early majority and a late majority, and then way down here on this tail end, you have the laggards. Why would you spend any time or resources on the laggards? Right? Probably the amount of effort that it would take to move them is going to keep you from having very much of an influence on all the rest of the curve. So, yes. Microphone, please.
Yeah, I would agree. We spend a lot of our time and resources working with faculty who are open to using technology. We then really try to stand them up as champions to convince sort of that middle 60%, right, about how to proceed. And the laggards, typically, we leverage the students to actually, because they'll respond oftentimes to the students, not the technologists, per se.
I mean, I think absolutely that that's something, and one of the pieces that I want everybody to keep in mind here is what we're trying to talk about is being strategic. My experience on the instructional technology and academic computing side of the house is that wasn't necessarily how we thought very often. We were so excited about some faculty members' wonderful creative idea, and this was going to go and where we were headed. And I think we're at a point that the key for CIOs and teaching and learning are to come together and say, where do we put our resources and time and effort that are most strategic in terms of what this institution is trying to do? And very clearly. And that conversation needs to happen in that way.
No, and I think the notion, and this came out yesterday, I believe it was, you may have made the comment, that leverage students. And we do it all the time. I will feed students ideas, whether it's through student government or student. So my IT tech staff for the help desk used to be all students. They're not student workers per se, but they all came through the student rank and they're now working for us. So they know students who are still in classes and they know the faculty well. So I'll drop an idea to one of those guys or to a student, or I'll walk into a class and say, I teach. So I think it's important, this came out yesterday, I think it's important for CIOs to teach currently so you can be in touch with the students, be in touch with the process. I mean, you don't know what it is until you go into an LMS and try and do stuff, right? I mean, we all stand up Blackboard or Desire to Learn or whatever, Sakai, and then we actually have to use it once as a faculty member. Holy moly. So, but leveraging the students, kind of going in through the back door, awesome idea.
I'm also going to say something else about students here. And please. There used to be one up there, and it moved in this direction. We talk often about teaching and learning, and it's about pedagogy. And so some of the other ways to think about things is, how do you work with faculty across technology to change the nature of student assignments for a particular class? That faculty member may never teach in a fundamentally different way, but the kind of assignments that they will engage their students in is a way in that they can get very excited about what they're doing. Question?
No, I just, perhaps more of a comment. I want to problematize the term that was used earlier about laggard.
Yes.
So that's a term, and as we're using it for adoption of the technology. One of the things that we've done is to try to avoid the technology-focused frame, the tech-centric frame of adoption, and instead talk more about the needs for teaching and learning, and to identify those faculty who, faculty, if you're working with those who are excited about teaching and learning, are open to identifying ways to improve the ways that they're able to deliver information to their students, the ways that they're able to engage their students, the ways they're able to connect with them, and technology becomes something that you can show them can fit that need. Now, they may be laggards, quote unquote, in the traditional sense of they don't look to technology for it, but they're innovators with regard to teaching and learning. Likewise, you may have people who are advanced adopters in our sense, right, of the technology, but they haven't changed their teaching and learning, their teaching style for 20 years. And so I think that one of the things that we try to keep in mind is not to get caught up in the finding the faculty who are really excited about the technology. And that's how we be strategic. Our end goal is not to get faculty to adopt a lot of technology. Our end goal is to make a difference in student learning. So.
You are exactly right.
Okay.
And the whole adoption curve comes from something called the Diffusions of Innovations by Everett Rogers, and it had to do with seed corn, and I promise that the farmers weren't getting wildly excited about the seed corn. They were getting really excited about growing better crops and moving in that direction.
Right.
So you are absolutely right.
And so sometimes we found that one of the things that can be most innovative is we're helping, it's not that exciting to technologists, but it can be really exciting for the students and for the teachers if you help them. This will sound silly because it seems kind of boring, but you help them make better use of PowerPoint for their lectures.
Right.
But that's everywhere. You invest in that, it's strategic, you can make a huge difference in teaching and learning.
Well, and you just keyed right into what I was supposed to talk about, was how do we create a culture of innovation, or do we have one on the campus? And the first question that the group came up with, really, or the response was, depends on what kind of innovation you're talking about. Is it technological innovation? Is it pedagogical innovation? Is it learning innovation? What is my campus trying to accomplish? And that's where I go back to the strategic goal, because Stephen's goals at Cecil College are very different from my goals at Southwestern University. And so understanding where that's strategic and where we want to innovate. I think one of the people made a great comment to say, is your campus progressive or bleeding edge? Innovation means something very different in terms of that stance, which also has to do with the overall risk posture and the image of that campus overall, which is the part of trying to understand that as a level. And maybe that's a conversation not only with your provost, but your president. It's a wonderful conversation to have with your admissions VP, who is out there selling a particular view of your campus and that experience to new incoming students all the time. So it gives you a really good sense of where that is. I think the pilot projects worked, and somebody talked about funding. Is that a way in? Is your CFO willing to do a pilot project? Are they willing to spend money and the project is not going to work? Do you have a tolerance for failure on your campus, and how much tolerance? How quickly do you get to fail once and then you've got to learn and prove that it goes through? Or in the prior look at people who've held in your position on the campus, it's sort of like a failure and you're out the door. So that's really important to understand on that campus. How are we, because we are talking to CIOs, and I think this is important and goes to whether you are one or you want to talk to one, how are they resourcing for innovation? Probably in higher ed, like in the corporate sector these days, 85 to 90% of your resources are tied up with keeping the lights on and doing all of those things that have accumulated over time that you're carrying in the technology space. So one of the biggest problems that's facing CIOs on the corporate side these days is how do they free up resources to begin to help their companies innovate, to use technology in ways that would address their version of teaching and learning or their version of student outcomes. So I think this is a conversation for all of us at the CIO level, very much, and one that you can engage in if academics are the mission, and technology is now playing an increasing role in that mission. How do you work with your CIO to free up those kinds of funds? Oh, I'm not supposed to be at the staff forum. I always love the pop-ups that totally confuse you. And so I think that that became another question for a CIO. How is your CIO perceived on your campus? If you're the CIO, how do you want to be perceived on your campus? Somebody once asked me what I wanted written on my tombstone. Okay. Do I want to be known for great innovations in IT? That I'm incredibly efficient. I've got the most dynamite data center that anybody's ever seen. We're reliable. Our campus can do anything they want because I've built such a great infrastructure. Or am I going to be known for helping the campus work through this incredibly chaotic time of transforming with technology in higher education? And I'm not going to say this. There's a right answer for each of you at your own campus. It's not necessarily the same answer, but I think that's something we've got to address. So in light of all that, and talk about culture, how do we change this?
Yeah, we're sort of running out of time, so I'll speed this along. Clearly, everything we pulled out of yesterday's conversation is in the notes in this Google Doc. This is a hot topic for me. As we look at the challenges of CIO, the ever-changing role of the CIO, the practitioners and professionals in teaching and learning, and we talk about how do we sort of bridge the gap, how do we bring people together, be more strategic, more collaborative, I think we really end up talking about sort of what the deep current is just below the surface of the stream is human behavior. This has everything to do, almost nothing to do with technology, and everything to do with trust, respect, mutual understanding, acceptance of diversity, diversity of thought, diversity of ideology, diversity of pedagogy. Speaking of which, I was actually challenged one day in talking about the CIO, TNL sort of relationship, I actually had somebody who was an academic say to me, you can't even spell pedagogy. So so the waters run deep in terms of mistrust. One of the gentlemen at the session yesterday had expressed it took him 5 years of diligent work, working with faculty, working with provosts, working with peers, staffs, whoever, 5 years to develop a level of respect in transforming a culture of IT that was, you know, IT-centric and not customer-centric. But it took them, I mean, you have to have patience. This is not a fast fix. But when we sit down and we think about, you know, the challenges we have in building these relationships, think about, well, do I trust that person? Do I respect them? You know, am I willing to accept that their ideas are a little different than mine? We may have different pathways to get to the same place. That's what's really sort of happening just below the surface of all of this conversation. And this is important to me because I come at this from a human behavior point of view. I mean, it's all about human behavior. It's all about how we interact with each other. So in the interest of saving a little bit of time for some really, really good stuff that we came up with at the end that came out of this meeting yesterday afternoon, I'm going to give that the time. So.
Okay, and I'm going to talk really fast. I'm going to mention one of the things that was sort of in Steve's area, but to think about, because no session that talked about teaching and learning and technology today would be complete if we didn't use the word MOOC. So at least what I wanted you to do was think about it and in the notes that you saw. MOOCs can be an opening for having a conversation with every single constituency on your campus about different things. That doesn't mean you're ever going to do them. But it is a great opportunity right now that there is so much interest. Parents, students, trustees, faculty, administrators, everybody's reading about it. Nobody knows what to think. And this is a marvelous opportunity, whether you are the senior teaching and learning person or you're the CIO, to sit down and say, what does this mean? What does it mean about us? And what is our instruction like? And what could we do with learning analytics? But if you think about that, we don't get too many of these wonderful opportunities when people can turn to us and say, help me understand. So I think strategically, this is one of the most important times ever, even if a MOOC never shows up on your campus in any form. It's a great time for conversation.
There are political high points that we have to take advantage of and then leverage. So MOOCs is one of them. So not to get bogged down in that word, but there are other political high points that we encounter on a daily basis or in your community. What's happening in your community? Oh, they're rolling broadband out across our community suddenly, so now people can get broadband access at home. How do you leverage those high points, those political high points, to have those to open discussions, broaden discussions, and deepen discussions? So it's not just about MOOCs.
But the big important part that we got to at the end, and the part I strongly, strongly encourage all of you to think about, those of you who are online and here, and to communicate with Malcolm, with Julie, with anybody about going forward, was this: how can ELI and EDUCAUSE help CIOs become more strategic about working with teaching and learning, the people in teaching and learning on the campus, and with faculty? And so people talked about having a survey similar to the ECAR student survey and surveying faculty and what are they doing with technology and what are their attitudes. And do we do that with a disciplinary association or something like AACNU for the co-sponsorship? And what that would do to start for all of us, having a better understanding of where faculty are, to turn around and looking at how do we personally, do we take classes? Do we teach? How do we sort of start to infuse and understand what teaching and learning is? How do we do leadership development? So there was conversation in our room that there were CIOs who came up from the network systems operations side, from the administrative side, and from teaching and learning side. Teaching and learning people were going, hey, you know, I could do with a little more understanding of some of the technology. And the people on the networking and operations and admin side were saying, how do I learn some more about teaching and learning? So how could EDUCAUSE ELI create leadership development opportunities that help people bridge that, to create that, because that's what we want, as people who understand both of those sides. So we had someone here as a CIO who had no experience in teaching and learning. So why is she at ELI? So she can learn. What's the language that people at ELI use? What are the topics that are important? How do I know what to pay attention to? So not only do we have a CIO here, but how can you help your CIO, if you're on the teaching and learning side, understand here's the important things to pay attention to. Here's what's strategic. How do we turn around and work together to educate people on campus to pay attention to this? So this was, to me, probably very much, as Stephen said, the most exciting part at the end, as people came together and said, we need to do more here. And so what we need from y'all and from people out there in the larger audience is the feedback on what would work. Is it webinars? Is it conferences? Is it pulling things together like CIO roundtables? But how do we move forward and keep this conversation going?
A few minutes for questions. Anything come from online? We have an online one, I think.
This is from David. Part of the issue with approaching faculty members and students with issues of teaching and learning has to do with street cred. For CIOs and directors of academic technology, this can mean that you have a PhD, but that doesn't always mean that much to faculty if you're not an actual member of the faculty. So what do you make of street cred, and how do you get it? What kinds of credentials do you truly need?
Well, I'll throw this one out there real quick, because this is going to upset the apple cart a little bit. I don't know this to be true, but I got this from a very reliable source, that the new CIO at the Wharton School at the University of Pennsylvania has no degree at all. Work on that one for a while.
I would also say I am 6 months into being at a new institution in a new position, pulling the library and IT together. And one of the things that was so important to me, as many people, is understanding the faculty and having the faculty understand who I am. And that is the reason I office in an academic building, so that I have the opportunities for water cooler conversations and hallway conversations. And street cred comes from having a real sincere intellectual curiosity, interest in what all of these incredibly wonderful faculty are with all of their ideas, and participating in their events. Go to new faculty orientation. When the department is interviewing candidates for tenure positions, attend the presentations. Become part of the community. They will never think that you're trying to be a faculty member, but they will very much appreciate the respect that you show and the interest that you have in what they're doing.
Walk the talk, and it takes a while. It's not going to happen overnight.
We had a question here.
Yeah, in the spirit of, this is weird to be not facing everybody out there, but to you two, of expanding the conversation, continuing these kinds of collaborations, untried, but we're going to try beginning a summit on all of the offices that support teaching on our campus in different ways. So CIO and technology, teaching and learning, libraries, deans of undergraduate and graduate studies, and the vice provost's office who oversees academics, because we each have a different piece of the puzzle. And as we think about teaching and learning and CIOs collaborating, as we bring in, like you're doing, the library and our many other partners, we're hoping that our picture becomes more complete and that we find the small micro collaborations that lead to a more comprehensive focus on student learning in the long haul.
Great.
I think that is critically important, and I would turn around and say, I'll put on my CIO hat. So if I had people who were coming together who are interested in teaching and learning, and they have partnered with an academic success team and the Writing Center and the librarians, now we're talking about strategic priorities for the institution. And I am far more likely to turn around and say, this is something I resource. Because look at the impact it's going to have, and look at this shared ownership across so many places on the campus.
I want to jump in real quick. Strategic plan is huge. Sitting at a vice president level, I have a fiduciary responsibility institution. It's a little different than most. CIOs, if you're just a CIO, you have a slightly smaller vision of the pie. If you can get somehow technology written into the strategic plan, it has to get funded. It has to get funded because we're all accredited, and accreditation, no matter which one of the accrediting bodies you subscribe to, they require you to match your strategic plan to your budget. So when I go in and I present something to my fellow vice presidents, I have the strength of the strategic plan behind me, which then feeds the budget process.
I have a question about sort of the relationship between operations and the ability to be innovative. And so I guess the question would be, if you don't have sort of a stable operating environment, network, servers, and storage, are you really going to have the credibility to be innovative on your campus? And aren't the two really very closely linked and should be considered?
Well, I think it's turning around and saying innovative and doing what? I mean, I think you have more credibility if you can turn around and accurately describe what's possible for people to do with the operating environment that you have. Which is saying we probably don't want to launch major distance learning efforts on an unstable network, but you can turn around and say, here are the kinds of things that we can do. So I think that's also the way that you gain credibility across the board, is a realization, much like Stephen's saying, if you're looking at the overall institutional budget in that way, and you're arguing for more money over here to create a better environment, it's probably coming from financial aid. Someplace. So I think having this credibility for innovation, saying we may not have the most stable network or servers, but here's what we can do, and we can still innovate and support in this direction, and if we win the lottery tomorrow, we can move in this direction.
And in a moment of shameless self-promotion, I'm co-authoring a report coming out in the spring with ECAR on the consumerization of technology in higher education. So when somebody fires up their personal device, or even a campus-delivered device, they don't care if they're getting Wi-Fi or they're getting cellular service. They just want service. So, yes, operational stability and a strong infrastructure is important, but as we move to more and more commercial products, we have faculty bringing their networks into our classroom, and they're establishing localized networks that the router is its own storage device, and they're keeping all of their students' work on that device, and they take it home with them. So it's getting crazy. So
Malcolm is saying we're coming to an end, but
I come from the admin side of the business, and it's funny to me what we keep saying, well, faculty has to go the IT side. They need to learn technology. On the other hand, you know, the people who's admin, we don't see that we are outsourcing all sort of core businesses. So if we don't, you know, think about education, you know, what do we do here? So, I mean, seriously, I'm sending a lot of stuff on the cloud, and network is going, you know, 360 and Google side. And so what is a network person doing? You know, so if you don't think about education, what is your core business? What do you do there? So, you know.
Good point.
Three cheers. That's a great thing to end on.
Thank you. If anybody wants to continue the conversation, I'm more than happy to step out in the hall.
Yes.
I'm on Twitter. I'm on Google Plus. I'm everywhere.
And keep commenting on the document. Thank you all so much. Away, those of you out in the wherever, in the great cloud, and those of you here.
Thanks. Thank you. You guys are good.